Tonight's show is dedicated to the memory of our beloved, faithful listener and longtime contributor, Colin Higgins. May eternal rest grant upon him, O Lord, and let perpetual light shine upon him. May Colin find the peace in death that he couldn't find in life. May his soul and all the souls of the faithfully departed, through the mercy of God, rest in peace. Colin, that is a prayer that's given during funerals. You will always be a part of our podcast and any podcast we do after it. I promise you, my friend, we will never forget you. May God have mercy on your soul.
Memories press between the pages of my mind. Memories sweeten through the ages just like wine. Quiet thoughts come floating down and settle softly to the ground like gold of autumn leaves around my feet. I touch them and they burst apart with sweet memories. Sweet memories of holding hands and red bouquets and twilights trimmed in purple haze and laughing eyes and simple ways and quiet nights and gentle days with you. Memories press between the pages of my mind. Memories sweeten through the ages just like wine. Memories, memories of holding hands and red bouquets and twilights trimmed in purple haze and laughing eyes and simple ways and quiet nights and gentle days with you. Memories press between the pages of my mind. Memories sweeten through the ages just like wine. Memories, memories, sweet memories, memories.
You're listening to the Trekmate Family Network.
The Battle Bridge is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Please visit techpodcast.com.
Worf, Solus, Sue, report to the Battle Bridge. I'll join you in a moment.
Ensign, secure connector level.
Aye.
Note in ship's log that at this start time, I'm transferring command to the battle bridge.
Ladies and gentlemen, I ask that you bear with us. This show is going to be very painful to listen to. It was very painful for us to record. Please bear with us as we try to get through our pain together and help us celebrate the life of a truly wonderful person.
You're listening to The Battle Bridge, a TNG podcast where we discuss everything about Star Trek, The Next Generation. And tonight's episode is Eye of the Beholder. I'm Lou from Nebraska.
I'm James from London.
And I'm Chris in South Carolina.
How are you doing, Chris?
It's been a long, long road from August to here. I was just starting school back, or barely into school when we last talked, and every single day since has been a long slog. So, yeah. Not because of COVID, because of other situations and people and humans being human.
Yeah, that's the only flaw in God's plan, was he made humans to be humans. Otherwise, he did a perfect job, didn't he? So, you're right. A lot has changed since we last talked. James, you and I were alone for the episode of Masks. And as I put on the beginning of the episode for that show, our friend Colin Higgins was to join us for that. But at the last second, you know, he backed out not feeling well. And we had since learned of Colin's death. Since then, Colin took his own life, if you do not know. And, of course, I'm very distraught about it. But, you know, we obviously have to go on. And this episode, we were talking about this before we recorded. If, you know, if this was any other episode, it would be fine. You know, but the fact that we watch a crew member jump into a plasma stream. So this very much deals with a suicide of a crew member and how they investigate why that happened. And it's like, this episode couldn't come at a worse time. So, thoughts, guys?
Well, no, that's absolutely completely right. I remember that. Yes, it's been such a long time since we have spoken, and we had. I was actually on holiday at the point where, like, you emailed over the news. You know, I had managed to get a weekend away with my wife. Really, the first weekend away that we've had since the beginning of 2020. And this was over the, this would have been at the very, very end of September, beginning of October. And I did see the email come through. And actually, I'm going to have to admit, guys, I just ignored you at that point. I knew I had the weekend. I didn't really look at it. I saw the emails come in, and then I saw kind of like a couple of more emails come in after that. And I was just like, okay, look, I'll get to it when I get back to England. Yeah. And Craig, you know, just at the end of our break, it's like, oh, what on earth happened here? You know, really shocking. And apologies that I didn't pick that up at the time. It didn't pick it up in real time. I kind of like left everyone hanging for those 3 or 4 days as well. And also, Lou, it's not the only tragedy that you guys have been dealing with. I know, so it's been a hell of a last few months.
Yes, absolutely. Actually, you know, I hate to say that. I don't want to sound cold. There's nothing you could have done, but I don't think he would have wanted it to ruin your holiday. So absolutely, you don't feel bad about it at all. I'm actually kind of glad you did. If I had known you were on holiday, I might have, you know, picked another time to alert you. But as you said, you had other emails coming in at the same time, so obviously you would have found out. And you're right. What he means by that, guys, is since we've last spoken, or no, maybe in okay, so I'm fried on my timeline. Somewhere back in the last 3 months, my sister-in-law was coming home from, sounds weird, but she raised chickens, and she went to a chicken show where she took first place, was coming home in the middle of the night when a wrong-way driver on the interstate was going southbound in the northbound lane, hit her head-on, killed her instantly, and so we had her funeral, and then about a month later, my wife's mother, she wasn't feeling well. Back in May, she stepped off a step stool and broke her leg. She had a tib-fib fracture. that was in different places. One in the tibia was a little higher than the fibula, and it was a very terrible break that they wanted to amputate her leg for, but they just decided to try putting pins in. She had been recovering from that and had a cast on. The cast was going to be coming off fairly soon. And it's believed that a clot went to her lungs, where she started having trouble breathing. My wife's dad took her to the hospital. Because of COVID, they wouldn't allow him to stay, so he left her. And on his way home, they called him and said, "You need to come back now. They're doing CPR." And so she died too. So she's dealt with the death of her sister and the death of her mother in a month's time. Then there's Colin. And, obviously family is more, it has to weigh more than the podcast or anybody who's involved with the podcast. So I've been having to help her get through the loss of both her sister and her mother in 1 month. And that is just, especially I feel for her dad most of all, loses his daughter 1 month and a month later is at the funeral of his wife of 50 years. So 50 some years, and it's absolutely sad. It's sad. So yeah, that's the reason why we last recorded an episode on August 22nd. And now today is December 20th. It has been just shitty over the last few months. So anyway.
I know I've been relatively incommunicado with you guys as well through that time, much to probably lose frustration at times. But my aunt passed of cancer, brain cancer, came this past summer. And so in September she passed, and then a family member in Grace's family, who we've grown close to for delve into on this podcast. She also passed of breast cancer that got into her bone marrow. So, and then this episode is particularly tough for me. Because my brother-in-law years ago, 2 years ago, actually in September, he took his own life, out of nowhere. Nobody expected it. There's some writings that he did that alluded to it, but nobody had seen the writings. And there's some music that I've listened to after the fact. He was a musician, and some of the things that he's written in his lyrics also alluded to it, but I just never made connections. Yeah, so it's a tough time, but I think that one of the things about the human experience is that you get back on the horse and you have to move on, you have to soldier on, and we remember those people that we loved. Before we even got on the podcast, I was talking about Dan Levitt, who a few years ago, he's part of the Trekmate family and got really close with him, and every time I open Skype, I see his face, because I have a call that we did where we just fought, like we really clicked and I favorited it. And so he's right there at the top with his son on his back, but loss is an inevitable part of life. And how we deal with it, I think, is powerful and speaks to there's a strange sort of beauty in all the macabre. And we have to soldier on and come together and support each other through everything we go through. And that's part of the beauty of human experience.
Oh, yeah.
But also part of the difficulty of it.
Yeah. Yeah. As I was turning Skype on today, I have it set to where my last few chats, obviously are on top of each other. And then I saw one for that has Colin lower decks, and then I looked at Colin's Skype profile, and that little saying that we can do. It says, "I'm sorry you're not here right now," and I actually made mine based off of that, I actually had one that said, without you, I would just be me. And that's cutesy and all, but then I don't know if you guys noticed it, but I changed it. And, you know, and it, I actually said, Colin Higgins, I'm sorry, you're not here right now. So. Yeah. What else, man? You know, I know. And I know, here's another thing. And people could tell me, you know, you shouldn't, you can't, I just talked to some of my best friends in life for the last 40 years. And, you know, they all said the same thing. You know, you can't dwell on regrets. You can only live your life and you go on. But I'm sorry for one thing that I said in a tweet that's very true. That we are 8 episodes away from the end. Of these last episodes, Colin was supposed to be on for Bloodlines, Preemptive Strike, and All Good Things. And, you know, because of the fact that our scheduling just so sucked over these last few years of doing this, this never, ever, ever should have taken this long. And, you know, I cheated him out of those episodes by doing this like this. So, I think if we do go on to DS9, which I'm not really sure we are, or James even wants to anymore. But if we do, it's going to be much more stringent than this was. Because I don't want this to happen again. Somebody that was looking forward to... He was there at the beginning. He was looking forward to being the one at the end. And God damn it, I cheated him out of it. So anyway...
I mean, hey, you can't think of things in that manner. That's not her. I don't think it's particularly helpful. And I'm certain that whatever Colin's issues were, there's. I'd like to believe that he had fun in all of the interactions that we had. But yeah, I would try to focus on the good times that we had rather than the times that we we are going to miss.
Yeah, well, cancer and suicide, it seems to be the worst thing, you know, what I've been dealing with in the last few years. And it just, God, when's it going to end? When is it going to end? Anyway. All right. So, we've pre-warned you. This episode is very touchy. It's very difficult. So, let's see what we can do on it. So, wrote these out 3 months ago. And I did not watch the episode since, so I'm really at a loss. So there's a problem with the warp core, right? And someone locks out the controls, and okay. This is where I just don't know how to put this. So this man, this crew member, walks to the plasma stream. And it's almost like it was a release for him to just jump into the plasma stream. Which is, you know, quick, I guess. But Worf was trying to stop him. Remember? And I always wondered, why couldn't Worf just pull his phaser out, hit it on stun, and blast the guy and knock him down?
The things I have to, I don't think this, this episode uses suicide in a relatively flippant manner.
Yes.
I don't think that there's really anything going on here. That they're not trying to say anything about suicide. They're not trying to say anything about state of mind. They're not trying to say anything about the desperation people feel. I mean, this would be unlike some other episodes that they have had. But it is entirely kind of presented as just a device for to get people into like the this is interesting, and then have the, you know, there's obviously the mirror of what happens with Troy later on in the episode, and you feel that it's a threat, but frankly it could have been anything, right? It's and you know, revisiting this episode after kind of the news, it's hard to see how they used the trope really without justification, without care, but it's certainly something that was very kind of obvious to me, kind of, you know, in the aftermath.
Right. And yeah, maybe
The episode ends up becoming sort of a murder mystery, right? Like it becomes this might be a murder because there's this pattern of events. And then you track that down and you find out that the actual murderer is this empathic wave or whatever, right? Like, so it's all this kind of cheap theatrics to create an emotional resonance that's not necessarily borne up by any of the other conversation in the episode. Like, it's not carried with any weight. Nobody talks about it in any, which we look to Star Trek a lot of times for. We look for the philosophical conversations. And I think when season 7 fails the most, it uses these characters that have built up a lot of love with us, right? Like, we through these philosophical conversations and these like figuring out of things, and sometimes fun episodes too, but like, this isn't a fun episode, and I love murder mysteries, but I don't necessarily love this one. I don't know.
No, I don't either. I don't like the way they set this up. So maybe Worf, even Riker, or the unknown ensign, they probably didn't have phasers on them in engineering at the time, so, or whatever room they're in. But, you know, I think of Will was so close to him, he could have just grabbed him, he could have knocked him down. They could have done a site-to-site transport when he didn't even know it was happening. There's things they could have done, but on the other hand, had he not jumped, they wouldn't have pursued this mystery as far as they did to find out what was actually behind the wall. So if they beam him out, well, I guess the episode's over. However, I agree with you, Chris. I don't like the way they handled it. I don't like Data trying to come to terms with suicide, or I don't like the way he tried to awkwardly cross his hands or his arms. I don't know. The whole idea of the robot trying to understand human behavior and why he would have done such a thing. I'm having a hard time dealing with Data being
so much with Data this season. Like, the Masks episode is all about his creativity, right? Like, him coming up with some creativity, and then they explore some weird thing. I don't know. It just is hitting the same beats too many times. I don't know that they needed a season 8.
No, probably not. No. So, but anyway, as we said, Will tries to talk to him, but he's determined. And just before the plasma shut off, he jumps. And so now they have to figure this out. So, but what do you guys think about the investigation itself? I mean, do you think they handled it pretty good, trying to figure out what was the driving factor? I mean, to go from the man standing in front of the plasma to where we found out what truly happened at Utopia Planitia. Do you guys like the investigation steps along the way?
as a fan of murder mysteries, I think that the if this was a true murder and they didn't try to take the pathic suicide MacGuffin, like if this was an actual murder and it was some murderer using empathic abilities to drive people to do this thing, then I think I would have, it would be more palatable to me. Because I love murder mysteries. And even though this looked like suicide, it not being suicide and that being kind of the trope that they use, I don't know. I think that, I don't know.
I agree with that. I think that there was enough there. I remember watching, you know, a while back when I watched it. You know, this episode's always been slightly boring for me, but when I watched it with fresh eyes, I thought there was enough there that I could see what they were doing, and it seemed fine in terms of these the steps that Troy goes through. It reminds me somewhat of that DS9 episode, and I think in season 7 as well, right, with the Ezri Dax hunted down a murderer, which I think turns out to be the Vulcan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
But I think that the overtones of the suicide in my mind don't work. And I think there are even parts of this where they are talking to people that, I mean, don't they have a discussion between Worf on this issue? And he doesn't bring up the fact that ritual suicide with Klingons is entirely normal. And, you know, but 18 months ago, he was prepared to end his own life. It just seems to be very sloppily done without really much respect for what there has been before. And frankly, it's kind of used in a very, you know, as I mentioned, in a very cheap and unearning way.
Yeah, that episode's writer didn't consult with this episode's writer. And Michael Dorn didn't say, wait a second, you know, why would I say this when I said this before? They just read the lines.
And with what's with the Klingons, right? The situation comes up again in Deep Space Nine with Worf and his brother. So this isn't, you know, we are watching the show, right? We do know this stuff. And if they wanted to go in deep, they could have done. And there's a lot of that. You know, there are a lot of different perspectives on the crew. I just feel that that's not what they wanted here, right? They wanted, it's almost as if this was adapted, that this would have been like a script adapted from a different show that they managed to squeeze people into.
Yeah. It's almost like they were trying to go in during this investigation, determine, you know, he has a girlfriend who's an ensign in sick bay. Did she have something to do with it? Did she push him there or something happened? What was he like? And then she starts bringing up how him and his supervisor didn't get along. His supervisor seemed to be threatened by Dan, who is the crewman who jumped. And so they're piecing all this together. So was he paranoid, or was everybody laughing at him? Or obviously he was picking up this empathic nonsense, or, you know, from an earlier incident, and that's what Troy is investigating. And because she's also empathic, she's picking up these same things. Did you like the pathway that was going as far as the investigation wise? Let's talk to the girlfriend. Let's get the coworker, boss.
I mean, that's fine, but yeah, I mean, that's fine. With Star Trek, you expect it to be slightly on a slightly higher level, right? So right. They would have done this while still making commentary about something else. So they would have used the particular scenario that they find in as an allegory for something else, as a way of talking about things. And I don't think they do that, right? So it's a murder mystery for the sake of a murder mystery.
And Lou, do you have the writers on hand by any chance?
The what?
Actually, I have them out for myself. Yeah, Lou, we didn't do what's it? We didn't do a start. We didn't do this.
Oh, you're absolutely right. We didn't do that.
But actually, so it's a story by Brandon Braga, and it's Rene Echeverria. And
oh, Echeverria involved though?
Yeah,
interesting.
You know, decent guys, right?
Braga, you've heard my spiel on Braga. I have no respect for the guy. Like, he's trope after trope after trope, and that's fine. I just don't care for it.
I mean, this season he's putting out like 40 or so scripts a year. So there's a lot of stuff coming out of his territory. But Echeverria's always good, right?
Almost without fail, like he is, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So this is strange.
Yeah, apparently some people thought that he was a woman, by the way. because of the name.
Renee? Yeah, I guess so.
Actually, I did mention that Echeverria is always good, but I just went to his episode list page, and it's like uncredited rewrite of Interface, uncredited rewrite of Dark Page, a teleplay of Inheritance. Yeah, maybe not great.
It's okay. Was he involved with Deep Space Nine a lot, though?
Yeah.
So that's probably why. I mean, Deep Space Nine is really great all the way through. I'll be sad if y'all don't do it. I'm just going to say that.
Do you remember when...
Now Lou on the spot, right? Because Lou's like, I don't want to make anybody sad anymore.
And dude, now he's on the spot. No, I do want to do it. But do you remember a day when somebody we all know was already doing a DS9 podcast? And we were like... 2 years ago. Who's going to end first? It's like, well, we can't...
It was touch and go for a while.
Yeah, for about 2 weeks.
We had a Smonsky who was like, every week, we're going. We're hitting. We're not stopping. Because his thing was, when we started, he said, I'll only partake in this podcast if we are consistent. Because the only podcasts that do anything worthwhile, they put it out every single week and people know it. And that's the thing, the consistency. So Posmosky has some very hard line things on that. And I don't necessarily agree with those. Like, I listen to the podcasts that only come out every 5 months or 6 months as well, you know, or intermittently, and they don't really know. And they'll put out a smash of like 4 or 5 and then they won't have anything for, I still keep those on my pod app. So, but you know, at the time that was his thing and we were like, well, you know, we can do that. And we just made it work. You know, we had a consistent day. And when there's four people, you can weave in and out, you know, 4 or 5 people. When there's two, it's a little harder.
Right. And I remember thinking the only, because I was interested in trying to get you to do the DS9 with us, but I'm like, yeah, you just did one. Why would you want to do another one back to back? And then, you know, I said, well, hell, that's not going to be back to back. There's going to be plenty of time in between. Not this much time, but yeah,
I don't know that my wife would be able to put up with me being every week on a podcast again. But if we did it like the way that this has gone, where I'm only on there once every month or so, I think she'd be fine.
Then we'd have to make it a monthly podcast. And we probably would end in time, a better time.
Yeah, you say monthly podcast as if what we're that's more frequent than what we're doing rather
exactly.
than less.
Exactly. I mean, what if we did every other week? Do you think you could handle that one? But just give it some thought. You know, you said at one time you were sure wouldn't mind going through it. I would like to go through it with you, too, because there are I'm going to say this without sounding bad. There are some stinkers in season one.
Season one is fine.
It's
In fact, I would say that season one is one of my favorite seasons.
Really?
I think so. Yeah.
Sometimes they're a little bored.
I like episodes that people think are bad episodes sometimes.
Well, like Move Along Home.
There than people see. Like what? What was that, Doc?
Move Along Home.
Oh,
I love Move Along Home. Yeah. It's fun. It's silly fun. I'd show it to my kids right now.
Hold on. I need to write something down right now before I forget. Chris. Must be on for Move Along Home.
I'll tell you this though, since we've gone way off the rails and we're not even talking about it, the podcast that I want to listen to and do is the Babylon 5 podcast. I think there's meat on the bone there. I would love if I could rope Smonsky back into that, but he's otherwise engaged, I think, right now. I'm not sure. and that's where I would love to move if I ever did a podcast again. It's probably Babylon 5. But I could be roped into quite a few episodes of Deep Space Nine if they're the right episodes. Like, maybe almost the whole thing. There's only a few I want to skip.
Babylon 5, James, if you watch that.
I have never seen it.
Me either. So wouldn't that be interesting if we watched a few episodes, see if it's something we would actually want to do? And then we could do, I don't know if you're familiar with, there was a podcast that's probably already beat us as well, called JR Watches Star Trek for the First Time. And this guy watches Star Trek. I don't know if it's a kid or if it's an adult, but he watches Star Trek with his friend and then makes a comment on it. Now, what if we did something like, if they're good, because I don't know.
If Babylon 5 is the best.
So if there was...
2.5 seasons, and I've heard nothing but great things about the last 3 seasons. And I think it's already better than any Star Trek I've ever watched. Boom.
Yeah, from 1994... we can give that some thought, but it's like, do we do Babylon 5 if we do before DS9 or after DS9 and before Voyager, after Voyager, or after
Enterprise? Who's talking about when he's like 90 at this point?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
Back to the episode. So we have a guy, he jumped into the stream, they do some investigations. We skipped the beginning of this episode. Where are we currently? Are we near the end yet?
Well, we kind of went through Geordi and Data talking to each other and engineering about why he was doing that. And, of course, Data is just so confused. But why would somebody... Did he even use the word self-terminate?
I don't remember.
I don't remember either, but that sounds like something Data would say.
Right. And like I said, it looked ridiculous when Geordi crosses his arms and Data's trying to emulate him, and he weirdly crosses his arms as well. But then we have Worf and Troy on the investigation, and it's time to check Dan's quarters. And one of the things we see is the picture of the ensign sitting next to his bed. And she's trying to figure some of this stuff out. They listen to his personal logs or his logs and even interview the girlfriend. Did it seem like she just wasn't quite broken up enough?
So at what point is this an illusion? Has actually happened yet? Because I kind of got the impression that this very quickly moves into like not being real.
Really? No, I'm thinking for the first 10 minutes or so, it was an investigation about why he would do this. Mm-hmm. But she hadn't gotten to the, I feel something is wrong thing yet.
I suppose that's when the switch happens.
Exactly, yes. Yeah, she's talking to the girlfriend, and eventually, they start investigating the woman who was there at the time. And it seemed like, if I remember, when she walks into the, I don't know what it's called, but you got this weird contraption, and there, of course, is the door, the isolation door for the plasma stream. And as she's walking in, she's actually startled by the woman that's already in there. Do we know what species she is? Because she obviously, she's not Ferengi, but Deanna's like, unless it was that empathic gobbledygook that's in this whole area that's blocking her from reading that somebody was already in the room. Do we know what species she is? Do you guys remember at all?
I don't know. doesn't that species come up on a couple of occasions? And I never know what she's supposed to be.
You know, I am going to put, actually, since I didn't do any of the guest stars or stuff, maybe I should actually do that. Okay, so let's see. Let's do that first. I'm sorry, guys. We're so discombobulated right now. We'll be better next episode. Not next week. Next episode. So, Eye of the Beholder. This is the 18th episode of Season 7 of TNG. First aired on February 28th in 1994. Teleplay was, like you said, by Rene Echeverria. Story by Brannon Braga. And directed by Cliff the Bully and Bull. Guest stars for tonight's episode was Mark Rolston as Walter Pierce. Nancy Harewood as Nara, who that's the one we're discussing. Tim Lunibos as Daniel Kwan. And Jonathan McCoy as Maddie Calloway. We have some co-starring as Nora Leonhart as Woman. Woman?
Kind of the role like, I was born to play.
Yeah, hey, what am I going to play in there? You're going to play Woman.
Yeah, it's a big role.
Yes, and Dan in Savoy says, well, what am I going to play? And the director said, you're going to play man. Woman and man. And one of those is a really good John Lennon song. You figure out which one it is. Then we have Majel Barrett as the voice of the computer. So what do we think about this one, guys? I think we've done enough of that already. So, back to the investigation. Tell me about his last few days. Did you feel like maybe... I kind of got a feeling that... I don't know if she's telling the truth about everything she knows. Do you think she's in on it, or she's just being manipulated by this telepathic echo, is what they called it?
So the telepathic echo, I thought the only thing that it did was it puts Troy into a weird state, or it puts the one person into a weird, confused state, and that's about it. I didn't think that there was any kind of side effect on anyone else.
Oh, okay. Oh, I get it. That makes more sense. See, I was thinking like the girlfriend was in cahoots because she and Worf get together, pissing off Deanna, and the supervisor was... So that's all part of the echo from what happened at Utopia.
Yeah, but I mean, by the point... I can't quite remember the exact point when the divide happens. But certainly by the time like Worf is up to stuff, that's not reality. That's Troy effectively in her, for want of a better word, echo coma thing, going through the motions and trying to make sense of it all and kind of project it onto her real life. So, that's not real Worf. At least that's what I thought. I didn't think that was... It's a telepathic impression that gets put onto Troy that made her feel that she was out of control and she was to go and jump into the plasma stream.
Huh. Okay. Because I was also thinking, is Troy seeing events that occurred with different faces of the faces that she knows versus the faces of events that happened in the past, or this whole thing never happened? It's just the ploy for getting her to just jump in the stream.
Well, no, so this is supposed to be something that happened in the past that for whatever reason gets imprinted in the room. Now that's a bit of a strange one, right? Because, what's so special about this room in this case? Is it that all psychics, whenever they get very emotionally distressed, they leave a print? Or is it when people get angry, they leave a print for people to pick up later? I mean, what exactly, you know, what's different here? Because this isn't going to be the only case of something like this occurring. However, the way I interpreted it was that this indeed was something that happened in the room that for some reason Troy and, you know, the guy before her ended feeling, and that kind of kicked off some kind of, you know, psychosis on Troy and on Troy's side, and also on the other guy's side, that led them to do what they did.
Okay. And another big mystery. Why did Troy's hallucinations and what she went through take a form of her and Worf hooking up?
I think that's like a deep... That's just her psyche trying to make sense of the emotional, you know, of the feelings that are in the room. And it, I suppose it's just like, you know, why does your brain go in certain directions when you dream? That's how I took it. Which also suggests, and by the way, I completely forgot about this episode in terms of the Troy-Worf relationship. It kind of suggests that Troy's subconsciously, at least, although maybe consciously, is thinking about a relationship with Worf, which we got something before with Parallels, and we're going to get something again with All Good Things. But I always forget about that there is this episode that's a bit of a bridge as well.
Yes, but okay, so then that's what I'm asking. It seemed like this was all in Troy's mind.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with that is we get a conversation between Riker and Worf. You know, Riker's out with the lady of the day in 10 Ford, and Worf is there, probably getting a prune juice or something. And, you know, he actually asks Riker, you know, I wouldn't want to, you know, get involved with somebody that you've been involved with in the past, and kind of like, hey, can I take out Deanna? Why would we have seen that? It's so obviously there's something that both of them have brewed up. His version of, boy, have I got a crush on her, and her version of, you know, we just fall in love so instantly that seeing him with another woman makes her murder him. So how do those two connect with each other so that in seven episodes, we get them walking out of the holodeck and kissing, going, what? Oh, that's almost as bad as Chakotay in Seven of Nine. Well, how did that happen? But where are we getting the two different sides of this budding relationship here? One seems real. Is in real time with Riker and Worf, and the other is in her brain.
Well, to call back to my other famous podcast, Continuing Missions, the Voyager book podcast, M'Zadi 2 is where we get that. So you could just read M'Zadi 2.
Yeah, send me a link. I have to get there.
Your commitment is... or inspiring.
Yeah.
You're not going to read it. You're not going to read it. You know?
I don't usually read it, but if it's his, I'll not. Sure, I will. You send me a link, I'll do it.
There is a condensed version, an audio version that you can get on Audible. It's not very expensive. And it's fun as well. I think those were written by Michael Jan Friedman, maybe. And they're actually... the two M'Zadi novels are kind of fun. And the audiobooks are read by William Riker himself and Worf himself, I believe. But they're fun little excursions into some of this weirdness that happens. Both in the first few seasons with the M'Zadi originally, and then in the later seasons with Worf, or the later seven. It's only this season, right? So in this season with Worf.
By the way, is anyone a fan at all of Worf, Troy?
No.
I mean, Anyone ever think that's the way to go? I mean, I don't get it. I also don't get Chakotay 7.
Neither did they. They write it away. They write it off very early on in the movies, right? Like, immediately they're like, why do we do this? Let's write this out.
Okay, so is it President Generations, or... I suppose it's... There's really not enough screen time for anyone.
No, it's not President Generations. And then in First Contact, it's completely gone. And then by Insurrection, it's back to...
Yeah, she's sharing a bath with Riker.
And they're getting married in Nemesis. So it took a few movies, but they finally were like, you know what, this is dumb. Plus, we got Jadzia now. But yeah, Chakotay and Janeway is the only relationship I recognize as legitimate.
Hold the phone.
Chakotay and Janeway.
Janeway. Yeah, Janeway.
Chakotay and Janeway?
Well, that was from... Dude. That was from... where's that from? From the
first, like, seasons.
Yeah, I know. It is. It's certainly there at the beginning.
They slow boil it for, like, the first three or four seasons. It's there. It's implied behind the scenes. Like, there's a weird Chakotay Janeway. They like each other. There's obviously some, like, sexual chemistry. And, like, it actually works for me. But then when they go away from it a little bit after he builds her a bathtub in one of the episodes or something.
Yeah, which is that episode? Which one is that?
I think it's season two something. I don't remember exactly.
Yes. Doc, you might want to be interested in something I believe Chris already knows about. There is a podcast out from Garrett Wong and Robert Duncan McNeil called The Delta Flyers.
Mm-hmm. I'm aware of it.
You're aware of it. Okay, listen to that particular podcast, and I'll get you the name of it somehow, sometime soon, because they actually they bring on Kate Mulgrew and Robert Beltran, as well as a writer, to discuss at length that particular episode. And unfortunately, you have to be a Patreon member, which is I've done it. It's $5 a month. I like listening to all their behind the scenes, but they do the review. Everybody gets to hear the review, and then the bonus features are what they remember before they do the review. Then they go watch it. You see some of their reactions, and then they talk about back, where everybody gets to hear what they review of it, and then they leave and they do rewrites, what they would do differently, the winners and the losers of the episode, as well as they sometimes bring on people.
It sounds to me like these guys have staff, Lou. That sounds like a well-rounded, fully packed podcast.
Absolutely it is. It's not just them two working in their basements. They've got people that keep them on it, and you know, we got 8 episodes. They got 5 seasons. They'll probably be done first. No. But no, they talk about it, and they bring, you know, Kate in, and one of the things she said was there was going to be a kiss between Janeway and Chakotay, but she didn't want that. They have to stay separate. That was one of the conditions of her and Chakotay getting close to each other, kind of like flirty. They wanted for them to naturally grow into a relationship, but she said no. She wanted to be the female captain lost in the Delta Quadrant and not ever allow herself to have a relationship with somebody under her command.
I love that. But I think that they should have maintained the sexual chemistry that they had, because it was legit and it was palpable, and they wrote into it a little bit. And I actually agree with her that she should stay strong and not choose to do it. I'm fully on board with that. I like that idea. But I the fact that they dropped it, and that then they had Chakotay, who's also a man of principle, right? He should have held fast as well. Like, if I can't have that one, the one who I obviously am the most compatible with, and like there's this spark with, everybody that's been watching this series can see. Like, I feel like he should have maintained that same level. And for them to just go with, well, he's kind of a good looking Native American looking dude, like we're gonna stick him with 7 and 9 and like make the relationship, like that was, it was just dumb at the end when you had this wonderful, like, two principled, powerful people have worked together this whole time with this weird tension between them, this crazy sexual tension between them, where they both obviously would love to just throw off the shackles of their rank and their position currently and fall heartily in love with one another. The books actually fix this, I think, a little bit, if I remember correctly, where they actually, it ends up with Janeway and Chakotay coming back together at some point. But
That would, like, be interesting.
At the end, you should have had the catharsis of them being like, all right, we're both free of these shackles. You're no longer Starfleet. And like, that's the end note is like them like having tea or a dinner or something. And you can tell it's kind of a date. Like, that to me would have been the most powerful note to end on after that season. But they ruined it, 7 and 9 mess.
Uh-huh. Absolutely, they did. Anyway,
yeah. My Voyager wishes and compulsions. I think Janeway was right, though. I think that's really fun to hear that Mulgrew said that, because I'm fully on board with that. I agree. I agree completely with her.
Right. And, you know, I don't know if Robert Duncan McNeil is just wishful thinking, but he was under the impression at one point that Paris and Janeway were actually going to become love interests. Or that Garrett Wong and Roxanne Dawson were going to be combining to each other. You know how she calls him Starfleet, Torres and Kim, she calls him Starfleet, is flirting with them and stuff. He thinks that's where they may have been going there as well.
That could have been.
Oh, yeah.
It could have been Chakotay Janeway, right? Like he and B'Elanna are the anti Chakotay and Janeway. So you got Janeway and Chakotay on one side that have to, like, maintain this rigid, staunch, we can't be in a relationship, even though we obviously should. And then you have the Lower Decks people, you know, that totally could and do, and it turns out really awful. And you see why the adults in the room can't do this.
No,
because it messes up everything multiple times. Like, that would have been great. I could have totally ridden with that as well.
Yeah. The morning that Penny and Raj woke up in bed together, that was awesome. The morning that Paris and Janeway wake up in bed together, wrong.
The hell is
just wrong. Just ain't the same. It's not the same. Now, Worf and Jadzia, on the other hand?
That was great.
Oh, yeah. That's gold. That was gold. So,
too bad they couldn't hire Jadzia for that last season.
I know. That is so true, because I like Ezra. I love her eyes. I do love her big eyes, but the rest
and
of
she
her...
has some good scenes, and there's some good episodes. Like, yeah. We all went into season 7 thinking we were going to hate Ezri. I remember, like, specifically Smonsky and I remember not remembering the Ezri episodes with much.
Hang on. Ezri is good. I like Ezri.
Right. Yeah. No, we came out of it agreeing with that. That Ezri, like, even though we went in, like, we loved Jadzia a lot and we had kind of gotten attached to her, especially talking about the episodes. And just remembering back to Ezri not being much, like, we were really, I think it was Smonsky and I, but I just remembered not being excited about Ezri coming on, because I was like, dude, I love Jadzia so much. Like, especially watching the episode multiple times, coming in and talking about it, like, I don't want to lose Jadzia, you know? Like, I was mad about it after doing all that. And I didn't remember those episodes with much fondness, you know? And so I was kind of worried that I was going to hate Ezri. But then I came out of it like, okay, Ezri was great. This was, of all the possible options, this was probably the best one. She's a likable actress. She has some good episodes. They do some decent things with her. DS9 was really great. I mean, they had good people running the show. They knew what they were doing. It's not a bad experience ever. It's not as good as Babylon 5 so far. It's not a bad experience at all. It's great. I love it. Yeah.
I mean, it's far better than Babylon 5. DS9.
Well, yeah, that's what they were thinking when they wrote it. When they stole Straczynski's idea and said, oh, yeah, we don't need you, bud. You run along. And then they make his idea a year before he's able to get his idea on TV. Yeah, they were like, oh, we're going to make it four better than him because screw that guy who pay him for the cool idea.
Yeah, we'll just make Babylon 15.
Okay. Well, you know, you may not know this, but Straczynski, the guy who wrote Babylon 5, took the idea to Star Trek first. He took it to the Star Trek people. And then they said no. They rejected his idea. They didn't want anything to do with any of what he had written. Like, he had this, the whole thing was Star Trek. Like, he had written it out for, with an idea of taking it and pitching it to the Star Trek people. And they said, absolutely not. We don't want this. You.
We're not and interested then in anything like that.
Yeah. And run with it. And he is also pitching this idea to other places. So, so there's some consternation between Star Trek fans and like massive fans of Straczynski that are like, oh, this was, they stole his idea and they put it in play as Deep Space Nine. So there's that.
Cool. All right. Okay. So anyway, yeah, hopefully if we ever do go on to a Voyager podcast, you know, they'll be done with the Delta Flyer so I can get all those behind the scenes things to come armed with. But of course, that will be ancient history for their podcast before we start Voyager.
Well, so I'm a now, huge fan of Voyager.
I like Voyager, you know. But then again, I also like the season 1, 2, and 3 Enterprise theme song. But that's going to start another argument for another day.
It was 1 and 2.
I'm actually surprised that people hate it. Every time people talk about how much they hate it, I'm like, I don't think it's that bad. I like Sting.
Herbert Russell or something Russell is the one. It's a right, it's an adaptation of it.
Similar to Sting.
Right. Right. Yeah. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's absolutely perfect when you consider all the visuals you see, including the Apollo missions.
I think visually it's the best intro that they've done.
Yes. Yes. Actually, you know, I'm going to end this tangent with this one last word, unless you guys got more.
No, we have plenty.
Plenty more about tangents or about...
Go on.
No, there is a YouTube video that adds the entire song from front to start, or front to back, front to end, the entire song, not just...
Start to finish.
Yeah, no, start to finish. There you go. Thank you. I needed that help. But it uses the visuals. It slows the visuals down so that it actually the entire Enterprise visual thing goes with the entire song by Russell Watson, I believe it's called. Or who's who he is. It sings Faith of the Heart. So that's an interesting find in itself, too. I liked it. But, okay, anyway.
So whilst we're on a tangent... Yeah. Is anyone watching Discovery?
Not really. I mean, be honest, not really.
I'm not watching it because it's not being broadcast internationally anymore. They, you know, Netflix is not they're not showing it, and we don't have access to whatever the thing is, you know, Paramount Plus. or whatever it is. That's something that was a bit of an odd one. It was like 2 days before that was due to launch. You know, basically, you know, the UK and non-US fans get basically told, hey, you ain't getting it, not this year. Now, I have to say, you know, I technically know that there is a place you can go where you can find it. It's on some kind of free app thing, and you have to watch it at a certain time at a certain day. I've left scheduled TV way behind, so I'm not doing that.
There's I actually had a Twitter conversation with Kira McDuff about this very same subject, about how they can't see it. But if, you know, there, I have a thing called Private Internet Access, PIA, that offers you the way to change your IP address, a virtual IP address. VPN.
Does that actually ever work? Because whenever I've tried to do anything like that with Netflix, the first thing they do is they say, we reckon you're using a VPN, and at which point the answer is usually, yeah. So,
no.
What is it? Is it just that there are worse VPNs out there that aren't on, like, the blacklist.
Could be. Like, for instance, you over there can see the Big Bang Theory on, is it Netflix? Okay.
Yeah.
We can't get Big Bang Theory at all here. So I hit that personal internet access thing. I change my VPN to London, England. Then I go to Netflix and I watch the Big Bang Theory.
Okay, so my theory here is that the things that are protecting UK rights are probably a lot less sophisticated than those protecting US rights.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if anyone can tell me that of a simple way of getting a VPN working, then knock yourselves out. But whatever I've tried never gets through.
I'll look into it for you some more. Yeah, it's like, for instance, I mean, there's ways around everything. Just using uTorrent.
I could fly to the US and watch it.
Every week.
Well,
come out over my house. I
want to see it. Yeah. Mexico and just buy the DVD. As soon as it shows, Mexico has it.
Okay, so in complete fairness, I should just mention that what I also could do, you can buy the episodes one at a time on Amazon. So I could do that, and I ended up doing that last year for a different show that I watched that seems to have great trouble getting over to the UK. So that I might end up doing that at some point.
All right. Yeah. Well, anyway,
I want to do that. I'm about to get Paramount Plus back because they got a new Western that I want to watch. And my buddy's getting the Halo thing, so we might like share the cost. Don't tell anybody. Super secret. And then I want to watch Picard whenever it comes out, just to see how bad they screw it up this time.
A tangent for another week.
But I love Discovery. The first season was okay. The second season was unwatchable, in my opinion.
What?
And so I can't imagine. Oh, God.
But they had Pike, and didn't they? That was the second season, right?
Yeah, that was Pike.
Pike and Number One and stuff, they were great.
It was so hard to watch. There were some scenes that were good.
And Angry Spock.
There was. Yeah. Oh, I hate it. I hated it so bad. I don't even want to talk about it. And then the third season started off really well, but I never finished it. So I just haven't. We quit on Paramount Plus. Whatever. Anyway, where were we?
That's exactly where I am as well. Started it, just haven't finished it. Don't really know where it's at. You know, get to the 32nd century and the burn, and it just started to get too stupid.
Well, by the way, unfortunately for you guys, the Discovery Season 3, it didn't end on a high. It really didn't. It didn't improve as the season went on. It became more and more stupid.
And there's just two or three episodes I kind of buy with this, but there's some weirdness that I don't know that I want to pay for.
They had a certain vision, they had a certain kind of change in direction, and stuff was happening. And then you just have to, you know, look at that point. You can either say, "Hey, I'm not prepared to watch this," or you give them the rope to see which direction they go in, right? Because Star Trek has always changed, has always been different things. But I found that. I mean, I think one of the problems is that, like, these non-serialized, these mini-series, which are effectively what they are, they're not written in a way that I feel that is... You can't come back to these things, like, 10 years down the line or 30 years like we do with TNG, although we haven't spoken about TNG for 15 minutes, and kind of rewatch them, right? It's like you go for the ride, and then at the end of the ride you go... Well, that was good or that was bad. And I kind of feel like the rewatchability and the investment I can put into Discoveries is less than what I would like. And I thought that they've done good setup in the past with Discovery, but then they just fumble it. And last season, the stuff about the burn, I think, was just nonsense by the end. It was just stupid nonsense.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so my issue is not necessarily with the episodic style storytelling, like because I love some of that stuff, and it's rewatchable if it's really well done, and then it carries off well. But I feel like so often now it's so hinged upon the cliffhanger that if you you never get any real release or finish, right? Like, and so with Discovery, like, I feel like when I went in the first season, I was like, oh, this is great. We're gonna have some like really good season, and it's gonna end well, and this carried on storyline is gonna be great. But then it ended on this giant cliffhanger, and I was like, well, all right, they got me. It was okay. There were some really, really, really great episodes. There were some powerfully high moments. I'm going to watch the second season. Well, I watched the second season, and Pike was great. He was a fantastic character. And there were some small things that I could hang on to. But overall, I feel like they played their hand. And they didn't have a lot of things to say or a lot of good things to do with those characters. And that was it. And when I finished that, I was like, I don't know that I want to watch this anymore. Maybe Star Trek is not for me anymore. I just need to. They gave me 500 episodes of great TV. I'm not mad at them. You know, I'll check back in occasionally. But at that point, I hated Lower Decks, and I didn't love what they were doing with Discovery. And Picard was good. It was a great nostalgia trip. And I might go back and watch some of it, maybe. I don't know. But I didn't feel like how I felt when I was watching the movies or the old stuff. And maybe that's because I was a kid and now I'm grown and I see what they're doing more. I don't know. But I haven't been completely satisfied by anything they've done. And I know that they've got the new Voyager, like Janeway with the kids show. I'd like to check that out. I'd like to check out Picard season 2. They have a couple other things playing that Paramount Plus is going to pull me in for. So I'm going to jump back in soon, but I haven't been completely bought in on Discovery. It hasn't been great. And you telling me that right there, Doc, and I trust your judgment most of the time. That does not give me high hopes for finishing Discovery.
So I do think that there's a problem with episodic versus non-episodic, because you lose certain storylines, certain things that are not able to be done in the new style. And then also that, unfortunately, the new style suffers from, and I think I've mentioned this before, but I think it suffers from, you always have to be bigger and more like impressive than what there was last time. So you start season 1 of Discovery, effectively kind of, it's the entire universe that's at threat, with everything that's going on with the Klingon War, with the mirror universe coming into play. Season 2, you're talking about the entirety of the end of time, right? With all of the stuff about the Red Angel, I think it's Red Angel, whatever it was called, coming from the future. Season 3, you go in 1,000 years into the future with the Federation no longer there. You're into Dimension Returns, right? You know, I honestly just want to watch an episode where a robot builds a little daughter and then they have a chat about interesting things about humanity, right? When can I get that? And I know I've had that for 35
that
years.
That Riker hits on her.
Oh yeah,
of course. But you expect that and you want it, because there's going to be some conversation about it, or there's not. And if there's not, then he has to deal with his consequences in his own soul. But that's real world. I like that, Doc. I appreciate that point of view, because I'm a huge fan of pro wrestling. And when I think about Star Trek, the episodic nature of Star Trek, you fall in love with the characters and the conversations that they have, the wars that they have with humanity as it is, right? And really what you're tuning in for every week is, I wonder how Spock would handle whatever situation he's going to encounter this week, because you love the character so much. And with these storylines, you're right. They have to build and build and build, and you have to get the new bad guy, and the new thing has to be worse than the other, and whatever. And if we look at DS9, everybody holds DS9 up in this like pedestal, and they say DS9 is really great. But look at what it did. It started off relatively episodic. It helped you fall in love with the characters, and then it took those characters that you fell in love with to an end point. And now if you read the books, the books have gone so crazy from the endpoint to like some weird other level. And they're always in wars and wars and wars and wars. And so you don't even want to read the books anymore, because it's like, I want to see Sisko just do some normal stuff. Like, I want to see him run the space station again. I don't want to see him fighting the seventh Centauri, whatever thing, you know, like it's, it gets too big and you're like, I just want to go back a little bit. Like, we've gotten too broad. Fill me in on some of the interstitials, maybe. But yeah, I that's good, Doc. I like that.
A lot of people push, you know, push, whenever I complain about like the episodic nature being missed, a lot of people will say, look, DS9's great. DS9 was an episodic. I think people forget how episodic DS9 was. And even in the seventh season, right? You know, you have Take Me Out to the Holosuite, which right. You don't have anything like that has been in any of the modern Star Trek series. You don't have a pause for them to have a game of baseball. And I couldn't care less about baseball. I don't know the rules of baseball, but that's not what that story is about. It's about the characters and people coming together, and it's about pride, and it, you know, it's about hubris. Those are the stories that you want, and of course you can put those stories into a bigger storyline, right? If you do need to have that defined within a much larger universe threatening role. But I loved how DS9 was able to say, look, we're not worried about the universe today. We're just worried about Sisko's pride against his old teammate. And that was just as good an episode as when, when you first discovered that the Kardashians were siding with the Dominion, or any other kind of like earth-shattering events that have happened throughout the 7 years of DS9 or TNG. And then that's really what I miss. I'm not naive enough to think that you can go back to, we're not going to have another Galileo 7 or Shore Leave or episodes that are just not, they are kind of their time. I you do need to go forward, but I really would like people to have to turn down the dial a little bit in terms of the catastrophe of people's decision making.
Well, I think that's legitimate, though. We've seen it with like DC, you know, like the DC universe or whatever. They try to do this big giant world building thing, and they built the world, and then they destroyed the world, and they destroy the world in every movie, and people got sick of it, and so then they realized they need to do smaller things. So maybe Star Trek needs that. Maybe they're like, hey, Discovery hasn't been a giant hit. We have this great character that people love. I love Burnham. I think she's a fantastic character. Mm-hmm. And I would love to watch Burnham just have to deal with exploration for once. Like, can she just be the captain of a single starship out there and meet an alien race that she's never met before, that nobody's ever met before, and have to deal with that alien race in some moment? And then you can also do the other stuff with her, but occasionally do what you're saying. Like, have Burnham run up against some. Because I love, again, I'm going to say this as loud as I can, as proud as I can. I watched 2.5 seasons of Discovery. I like the character of Burnham. And I like a couple of the other characters that I've met on there. Tilly. I love Tilly. Mm-hmm. There's good characters there, and there's good characterizations there. But I want to. I don't always want to be in some life-threatening, awful situation. I want to occasionally see a relatively mundane episode. Hell, but I may not be the normal viewer because I watch Father Brown on a regular basis. Like I'm watching mundane dudes solve crime mysteries every week. I love that stuff. You know, so like maybe I'm not your normal viewer. Maybe I'm not the millionth viewer or whatever.
Yeah, but I just want to see something one day. I mean, but having said this, right, Discovery must be costing per episode more than TNG was costing per season.
Yeah.
it must be in terms of the budget that goes into the thing. And that's that again, it feels to me like you should be able to find the space, right, for the smaller stories. And that doesn't mean just never having anything of significance,
right?
But I the amount of money they must have thrown at Discovery, and the amount of money, I'm certain that Picard, as in Patrick Stewart, he must be getting at this stage in his life for the kind of stuff he wants to be involved with. He must be being paid, more per episode than he's been paid per season on TNG. There's no way that he'll be doing this thing if it wasn't the case, and I feel like there's resources there that people can just tap into to give us a certain type of Trek. And look, I know that Strange New Worlds is supposed to be what I'm after, and that's mm-hmm. coming. We will see.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on. I need to just divert this tangent over one direction for a second. So at the weekend, we went to see the new Spider-Man film. Is anyone got any interest in Spider-Man, or have you seen the Spider-Man film?
Me? Love them all. I've watched every single one. I'm going to go see this one soon.
Okay, I will try not to spoil you this, okay. My wife came out. My wife isn't like a big comic book guy, but you know, we went there with the kids, and the wife was saying, you know, basically, what they need to do in this film is that they need to cure the bad guys. They need to cure, you know, Doc Ock and the Green Goblin, and you know, basically make them good. And my wife was like, "That's a bit odd, because you're kind of like forcing medical treatment onto people when they technically should have agency." And I was like, you need to watch some Star Trek with me, because that's what you get in Pen Pals. You get a lot of that kind of stuff in Trek. You don't get it as much in Marvel films. And I think that she was just expecting a slightly different conversation, a slightly different film than what is really, you know, going to be at the blockbuster, at the cinema, in 2021.
Speaking to our current times. And what do people...
Sorry, pardon me?
What do the overlords want us to believe today? That we all need curing from something, right? You need to be cured from your political ideology, or you need to be cured from your COVID-19, or you need to be cured from whatever else it is. So, I mean, your blockbusters always mirror what your current situation is.
Oh no, but I'm certain that that had not... So, I think that the film is more relevant today than they ever intended it to be. I don't think they saw this coming, and it's not commented upon in the film. It's a straightforward, we need to go and stab the guy in the back with basically a cure. And it's never mentioned. The parallels with today, I think, are pretty strong, but they are not there from a screenplay perspective. I found it really weird, because there was a lot that they could have discussed, but I honestly think that they happen to have landed at the time when that's in the zeitgeist.
Well, that's intriguing. I want to drag this back to our other conversation, though, Doc, because I would love to come back. We can do a Spider-Man episode sometime in the middle of the week this week. I'm willing to come back on Skype and do a Spider-Man episode with you. But this episode of this Star Trek story that we are currently in, that we haven't talked about for 35 minutes, is we've all agreed that they used the trope wrongly.
Yep.
Right. But you know what? This conversation has colored me to believe that this is the type of Star Trek that I want now more than anything. Like, I want an episode where I can say, I didn't like the message. Like, I didn't like the idea that they tried to promote and really blow up in this one. But I think that the murder mystery worked on some level. Mm-hmm. I think that it was interesting. It was like a little twist on what a murder mystery should be. I don't necessarily like the twist per se, but the murder mystery was done competently enough. My characters weren't hurt too bad. And I like Deanna Troi a lot, you know, and so I like any episode where they use Deanna Troi more. So I think that while this episode, for all of its flaws, it is the Star Trek that we crave now. It's the void that we're currently in.
I agree with that. And I have to say that I don't think it's necessarily the case that this episode kind of pushes a particular kind of interpretation of anything or use of something, other than I think it's coming through naivety of it being, you know, a product of its time. And by that, it's what this is like early 90s, right? So I just don't feel that the kind of issues that you would, if this was being written today, and you know, no one would kind of line up the storyline in this way, and things that go uncommented, or even the things that are commented by Data and Geordi, right? They wouldn't be framed in the same way, even if people were hell-bent to represent it that way, just because I feel like society has moved on significantly.
Okay. All right, so...
Sorry, Lou.
No, don't be sorry, but I was, I just was sitting here thinking...
But I'm late. I'm late.
You're late, but I was just thinking that, you know, we started this episode talking about Colin, and quite frankly, Colin would have hung up by now.
He'd have hated it.
Oh, he was. He did not like all the tangents.
Yeah.
But hey, that's okay. Hey, maybe he's driving this one for all we know. So two things I got out of all that last tangent thing was, one, Captain Burnham. I didn't know there was such a thing, so I do need to get back in it. Secondly, you mentioned Star Trek Prodigy. You didn't call it by name, but you mentioned it. I did start watching it, so I suggest it, Chris, if your kids, and James, if your kids like Star Trek too, and you want to get into a family Star Trek, watch Prodigy. It's a little silly for me, but I like to see what your kids think about it. My kid is 20 years old, not interested, never will watch it. But I like to know what younger kids will think about it. Okay, let's go back to the investigation. That Worf and Troy are doing in this room when she starts getting these empathic flashbacks of crew members commingling with each other, laughing at... So I take it two crew members cheating on another crew member with a person that's in this Jeffrey's tube, kissing each other, and now they're just laughing at him. Deanna is getting that as if it's happening to her, and almost, you know, a little bit later, almost jumps into the stream herself. I was totally screwing her up. You guys like that?
So, what's the question here?
Well, what do you think about the whole idea of the way the empathic thing was happening with Troy being in that room, feeling everything that was going on as if she was the person living that time? Like walking in on their significant other, kissing somebody else in a Jeffrey's tube, or she's seeing faces, you know, like that. And now she sees a face of somebody who's actually a crew member on the Enterprise. I kind of like the way she builds up this empathic investigation. In a way.
Yeah. I think mechanically it's all done fine, right? I don't have any problems with certainly also, you know, the climax, for want of a better word, has the as Troy wanders in on people and then ends up who does she kill? She kills Worf, doesn't she? Rather than the woman. I find all of that to be, at this point you kind of know that it's not that it's not real, right? You're not going to really be killing off Worf by how did Tasha Yar go? Tar monster. What about Worf? Troy killed him in a lover's fit. So you kind of know that something's going on here. But I think. Logistically and mechanically, what's going on is all good at the end.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah. I mean, yeah. Troy kills Worf, and her little meltdown. But unfortunately, she left a witness, so you don't want to do that. Can't leave any witnesses behind. But anyway, okay. So then we know that. Or do we? I still don't know, really, about the relationship of Troy and Worf from each side. He is inquiring about Riker. Is it okay if I date your ex-girlfriend? She is in... Because they sleep together. They spend the night together. Was it real or not?
In this episode today, I think I must have blocked that from my mind.
Maybe it's too much for the UK version. But yeah, they wind up together in her quarters, or maybe it was his quarters. Who knows? But after, you know, they kiss, and then next thing you know, he's waking her up. You guys missed that part?
Maybe they just dozed off.
Really? Oh, wow. Okay, because I thought, oh, man. So, in a way, All Good Things was like, where'd that come out of? But no, actually, it didn't. They at least showed it. I don't know. Well, is there a UK version?
They didn't properly sleep together in this episode, right? It must have been in Troy's mind.
Right. That's what I'm thinking.
Because right at the end, there's the, Worf does this rather convoluted, when I pulled you away, you were very surprised to see me. Why is that? And he's like, okay, well, you're just asking for a certain, no one would ever phrase the question in that way unless you wanted to, as a writer, for someone to actually mention something explicitly. So it's a very convoluted question that Worf asks. And then it gives Troy the opportunity to mention that, what is it? Hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, kind of thing. I think it's mentioned. I don't think Worf and Troy are together at all in this episode, unless I'm just missing things.
Yeah, no, it's in there. Yeah, because I mean, she even asks, and why didn't we do this a long time ago? And then you get the old Dr. Troy, or Dr. Crusher to Troy, she answers, yes, doctor. Yeah, can you come in? I need to give you a shot. Okay. And then they go back to kissing, and then you get Crusher to Worf. What is it? Come in, I need to give you a shot. You get both sides of the conversations going. But anyway, yeah, it's definitely in there.
No, but I think this is all in Troy's mind.
Right. That's what I was wondering. It has to be. So then probably the same ensign who is, now he's going to be hitting on Worf, and they end up together, which is what causes Troy to kill Worf in her illusion, head to the room, and, this is where she needs to end it all. All right. Let's see. So she obviously was about to jump, but she doesn't. What are we forgetting? The guy on the ship, was he real? Because they interview a guy who worked on the ship at Utopia Planitia ship, but now was an engineer. Was he real?
Okay, so I can never remember. Was he the guy that originally killed him? Or
yes, yes,
yeah. So he was the guy that actually originally died right in Utopia Planitia, right? Unless I am confusing it, because I think they mentioned that he was like a, 3/5 Beta Z,
right?
Which is how this thing kind of started in the first place.
Yeah, because it seemed like the guy wasn't really there. So it's hard for me to remember from 3 months ago.
So the guy, the guy with the brown hair, right? He was the guy that originally was at Utopia Planitia. He doesn't exist anymore because he killed himself while the Enterprise was being built. And the thoughts that he had as he kind of committed suicide after having killed his I don't know if it's wife or just girlfriend, but that stayed in the Enterprise. And, first, which is Ensign Quan, and then Troy end up picking up on this echo and then basically reenacting the same event. Now, I still don't think this can't be the first Beta Z that's found himself in that position. So I don't quite know what's so special about this one. Why he's in this tale of destruction, whereas I imagine previous Beta Zs haven't. It's a bit of a strange one.
Okay. Yeah. Well, basically, all three people are dead, so there's really nobody to arrest. This whole mystery wasn't about solving who done it and then bringing that person to justice. It was just the flash of the stuff got to empathic people. How it didn't get them early on in the series is interesting.
I think they had the throwaway line there where they've only just started renovating this part of the ship. They basically had it closed off and no need to have a look at this part because it's all still ship shape.
Okay. Oh, that does make more sense. Okay. So, yeah. I guess we are going to let Dr. Roberts go to sleep. Hey, sound good to you? Okay, so I guess unless you have anything more? Nope, then it's time for our final thoughts and ratings on this episode on a scale of 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst and 5 being the best. Chris, start us off.
All right, so this episode is obviously not the best. But
what?
Star Trek. It has Geordi LaForge. Fantastic. Deanna Troi. Captain Picard. Riker. Yeah, I hate Data, but Data, I guess. It has everybody you love so much. Worf. You know? So can you really give this episode any less than 5 stars? I'm gonna give it 3. I think it's a 3-star episode. It's middle of the road. It has a trope. It is a mystery. It does some fun things, but ultimately I think that the fact that it tried to use the suicide thing as like a capture and then they never really did anything with it, it definitely diminishes this episode by at least 2 stars. So I'm gonna give it 3 stars.
Okay, cool. All right. I was going to say, I don't know where you were going with this. Sure, they all have Captain Picard and Riker and Worf and Data and
Troi. Well, that's why that was 5 stars.
So they're all 5-star episodes, if that was the case. So
I thought that was pretty well understood.
For them, 5-star.
They're all 5-star. Okay. Anyway, even Tasha Yar?
Especially Tasha Yar.
No, Tasha Yar. No, Voxing. Yeah, give that a 5. I like to see that happen. Especially Tasha Yar. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I'm gonna go next just for the fun of it. Yeah, no. I don't like this episode really at all. I'm sorry. I wish there was somebody that could have went away in handcuffs, but there wasn't. It was all about this telepathic and empathic not mumbo jumble that came when they opened up a door or they knocked down a wall. It just seems so silly to me. I do like the investigation. I like when they, you know, put Troi through some torture. That's always fun. Troi and Worf didn't like it. Troi wakes up in her nightie, liked it. I always like Troi in the 90s. Those are, yeah, those are mind baffling at times. What else can I say about it? No, I mean, I don't see middle of the road. I see it on the side of the road calling AAA. So this is a 2 at best for me. At best. Just because I do like the investigation that Troi embarked on. Despite whether she wanted to or not. Doc? Okay, you've been calling it a 5. Why?
Who, me? No, I mean, only if you renormalize the scale.
Yes.
I thought I was going to be coming in at 2. But also, I mean, it really isn't a great episode, right? So I think that maybe I would be too harsh if I say it's only 1 out of 5. Because I do remember the show being more fun to watch than my memory suggested, but the entire thing about suicide is just like tacked on for no reason, and I don't think they do it in any particularly clever way or interesting way. Overall, the good parts of it. I think Troi's okay; she's good in it. Troi should be given more stuff to do, I think that she. Yeah, it's unfortunate that she doesn't get given great stuff to work with, but she's perfectly fine in this episode. We're into the territory of some of these season 7 episodes being, you know, a little weaker, a little, you know, not much there, and this is certainly one of them. So I'd bring in a bring it home today at a 2 out of 5.
Okay. Anything else?
Nothing else from me.
One last thing. We talked earlier about the Delta Flyers podcast, which I think you should always. And I don't know if you're okay with me doing this, so you can cut this out if you want, because you're the king. You are the king, sir. But there's a guy from Greenville, South Carolina, my very home state, who's a comedian, and he is a huge Star Trek nerd. And he started a podcast recently called the Computer Resume Podcast, where he's trying to go through all of the Star Trek episodes in order of like a timeline. And it's not nearly as complex as I can't remember the guy's name who does the crazy, like, even going out of time. Like, he's just trying to do the ones that, like, canonically would happen in Star Trek universe first. So, like, episode versions, like, he's doing Enterprise, and then he'll do Discovery, and then on and on like that. Anyway, Computer Resume Podcast. It's really funny. They're only like 30 to 40 minutes every time, and he's hilarious. So if you really need some more Star Trek listening in your life, Computer Resume is great. I'm done other than that.
Okay, I will write that down and try and get it in the show notes.
I thought you were going to say, I will edit that out.
No, I don't do that. Really, if you think about it, in podcasting, there's really no strict competition. I mean, everybody sluts each other's stuff. That's the way it should be. So Computer Resume, because I don't think I've ever talked about Delta Flyers on this show. So,
out there.
Hey, if they got they got Admiral level Patreons, that's buku bucks, dude. So I'm glad Garrett and Robbie are doing such a good thing, because I absolutely love listening to them. So no such thing as stingy podcasters. So anyway, all right, guys. So join us next time as we review episode number 19, and that is going to be Genesis.
Genesis. The name of the place we're going is Genesis.
Genesis?
Yes, Genesis. How can you be deaf with ears like that?
Genesis allowed is not. Is planet forbidden.
And we'll all be surprised on who's going to be joining us. And since you're never going to hear this in time, by the time people hear this, they're going to be celebrating Valentine's Day. But to my two good, wonderful friends that are on this line with me, Merry Christmas, my friends.
Yeah, Happy Christmas, everyone.
Happy Christmas, that's right. It's Happy Christmas over there. Happy Merry Christmas, Chris.